24, 32, 26, and 25, 551, Amonte Bueno versus Blanche. And I understand we have Mr., is it Mr. Azen?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I understand you'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So please, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Aaron Azen. I'm with the Erie County Bar Association Volunteer Lawyers Project, and I represent the petitioner in this matter. Your Honors, the agency erred when it failed to terminate Mr. Amonte Bueno's immigration case after finding that the statute that he was convicted of in New York was facially overbroad when compared with its federal equivalent and was also indivisible. We respectfully request that this court find that the board legally erred and remand the case back with instructions to terminate this case. Your Honors, this court has been very clear about the steps of the categorical approach. First, we look at the plain language of the statutes. In New York, the definition of methamphetamine clearly covers all isomers of that drug. The federal definition only covers optical isomers. And the federal government agrees with this. In their first board decision in this case, they found that the language was facially, that the New York statute was facially overbroad. But instead of terminating the case, they sent the case back to the immigration judge with instructions to perform a realistic probability test. A test that this court—
You said it covers all isomers. Why shouldn't we read the word realistic into that? All realistic isomers as opposed to theoretical isomers?
Because, Your Honor, the test in the as part of the categorical approach, we look at just the language of the statute. And the Supreme Court has said several times that absent evidence to the contrary or persuasive evidence to the contrary, we assume Congress says what it means and means what it says. And we would propose that that applies equally to state legislatures.
The Supreme Court has also said there must be a realistic possibility that the state would enforce the statute as contemplated or as argued.
So, Your Honor, I would give two responses to that: one legal, and then one more practical. First, with respect to this court's rulings taken from the cases from the Supreme Court, this court has held that the realistic probability test only applies when there is either a categorical match or the statute is indeterminate. In this particular case, the New York statute clearly just says isomers. It doesn't give any exceptions to that, unlike the federal definition.
Why would we have to construe New York law to have an exception, as opposed to just saying if the New York law says methamphetamine and let's say all isomers, it means all isomers that actually exist? And then we would only be interpreting New York law, because doesn't it seem odd to interpret New York law to cover non-existent stuff?
Well, Your Honor, I guess that would go to my second point. Your Honor, one of the things that the New York legislature was really concerned about, and this court discusses this in Minter, dealing with this isomer defense. And the court rejected in Minter this notion that the state statute, in Minter,
the alternative isomers in fact existed, right?
That is my understanding, Your Honor.
There's some language to the effect that the other isomers, constitutional isomers, I think it was called, existed when the legislature passed the law. Could the New York legislature have intended to criminalize isomers that do not realistically exist?
Your Honor, I think the New York legislature was dealing with this very, very brilliant legal strategy of individuals getting past indictments and convictions by saying, look, what we're making here is not technically part of the statute. And so they said, we are going to make this as broad as possible, not just to cover the isomers that we know exist right now, but any future isomers that may come about that we aren't aware of at the moment. To give law enforcement, to give the courts, to give prosecutors the most number of tools. I mean, the government tried that argument in Madrid. They said, well, it's only limited to these specific isomers. And the court said, this is actually a legislative issue. You need to take this up with the legislature. So, and I think realistically, this case does a very good job of showing how science can progress. So the government, when it produced its evidence in this case, relied on a 2018 article. It relied on another article, I believe, from 2020, and then the Gamboa case from the Ninth Circuit. And in that particular, and in that decision, they relied on all that evidence. But we produced an expert that said, wait a second, this is from 2024. We're actually rethinking this. Like, there are certain conditions in which these isomers could exist. And this
in cryogenic temperatures in a laboratory setting, in theory. But I don't think the testimony was, this has been created in a lab somewhere, was it?
Not at the time of the report.
We can theorize all sorts of things, right? You could theorize that, as in Jurassic Park, we're going to bring back dinosaurs, right? But there are no dinosaurs. So just because we can theorize that someday science will get there doesn't mean that it is real, right? Because that's what science fiction is about.
And Your Honor, this is why we would propose to the court that it's extremely important that we follow the rule that this court articulated, and specifically that we look at the plain language of the statute.
So what if I think it was the Ninth Circuit said, what if the plain language of the statute says that it's a crime to, walk a dog without a leash or to walk a dragon without a leash? You know, and that was the state law. And the federal law says it's a crime to walk a dog without a leash. The
Your
Ninth
Honor,
Circuit says, well, there's no such thing as a dragon. So, of course, the federal and state statutes match up. But in that circumstance, would you say that there's still a mismatch? You would say, well, we all have to pretend dragons exist and we just read the plain language of the statute. And maybe that is your position, but really?
Your Honor, we don't. The Ninth Circuit gave that example at the very, very end of its decision. And it's been repeated by other courts.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Play out the hypothetical, because that's what helps us test the limits of the legal proposition.
We don't know if they were referring to Komodo dragons that a zoo might be bringing in.
Oh, well, that's fair. Okay.
Or a bearded dragon that a kid might have in the bedroom.
Dragon and say chimera. Something that's obviously always been imaginary, you know, a chimera.
Your Honor.
This is to test out the limits of the legal proposition. And again, maybe your view is Congress wants to ban chimeras, then that makes things not a categorical match. But is that actually the proposition you want us to adopt? Because that's where it would lead us in other cases.
Your Honor, I think it is best. I think this court has said many, many times what the rule is when it comes to the categorical approach. This court said it in Minter. It said it in Jack. It said it in Hilton. It said it in Matthews. It said very specifically, Your Honor, I see I'm out of time.
But the purpose of the categorical approach is to read a statute in terms of what is the least evidence that could possibly support conviction. Now, let me ask you so that I'm clear on this. At the time the New York statute was enacted, did non-optical isomers exist?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
At the time your client was convicted, did non-optical isomers exist?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
And at present, non-optical isomers do not exist, correct?
I cannot answer that, Your Honor. Their expert report is 2 years old, and the expert specifically said that this was at the forefront.
At the time of that report, they did not exist. In fact, they were only theoretically assumed to be possible, correct?
That is my understanding.
All right. So in those circumstances, given the purpose of the categorical approach, how is it served by discussing the possibility that at some unknown future time, a non-optical isomer might exist?
Your Honor, it's served because it provides for a consistent rule that this court, again, has articulated in many, many published cases, that the standard we go by is what the legislature adopted.
Well, usually we think that foolish consistency is the hobgoblin's little minds, but that's another matter, I guess.
Your Honor, I guess I would point to Matthews, and specifically Judge Jacobs' concurrence in Matthews, in which he said something to the equivalent of, this particular outcome could not possibly have been what the legislature's intended. And it is entirely possible that, we're doing this out of obligation.
But there we were talking about what the legislature intended when there was a real possibility, correct?
Perhaps, but Your Honor, I think it comes down to why the legislature passed this.
Concerned that if at the time the legislature enacted something and used broad language, something was impossible, and 10 years, 20 years down the road, there becomes a non-optical isomer and someone gets prosecuted for that, whether there might be an argument to be made that there's no notice that that's going to be a crime because that possibility didn't exist and therefore couldn't have been within the contemplation of the legislature. You don't have to answer whether that's likely to succeed, but I don't think it's a far-fetched argument.
Your Honor, the court in Gamboa, the Ninth Circuit decision in Gamboa, there's a footnote down, I think it's the second to the last footnote in that decision. Basically, says to the district courts, we don't expect you to keep going back and having organic chemistry arguments every time. We have decided that non-optical isomers do not exist, and that is now the standard. And so you can possibly get around this with the realistic probability approach. But, this is the standard that we're setting right now. They do not exist. But it goes against what the legislature intended. The legislature certainly didn't know. The legislature at the time it passed the cocaine measure knew about eight isomers. That's it. And the government said, look, they changed the wording to isomer, so therefore isomer must mean only these eight. And the court came back and said, no, they said isomer. So we will give them the benefit of the doubt. There's no preemption issues here. There's no constitutional issues here. There's no Bill of Rights issues here. There's nothing here that should give the court pause about reading this in any other way other than what the legislature intended. In other words, all isomers. And the court, and we would respectfully submit that the court should follow the clear rule that it has articulated. Again, Judge Jacobs said, we would not dare try to support this conclusion to any sensible person. But he said, we have to follow the fact pattern. And okay. The Supreme, I'm sorry.
No, that's good. We appreciate it. You've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal, so don't go away.
Yes, sir.
Why don't we hear from the government? Mr. Zaidi?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Imran Zaidi for the Attorney General. The sole question before the court is whether petitioner's methamphetamine conviction in New York qualifies as a controlled substance offense under the INA, and in particular, whether New York's meth definition aligns with the federal definition of meth with respect to isomers. Now, the short answer to this question is yes. Petitioner's own expert evidence reflects that meth exists only in the form of enantiomers, which are also known as optical isomers, and that is precisely how meth is also defined in federal law. So what is left for the court to decide here? There is no controversy over the proposition that I just laid out, which is that the expert testimony here establishes meth only exists as optical isomers.
Let me just ask you this. Let's assume a Breaking Bad scenario.
Sure.
Brilliant high school chemistry teacher realizes that he can invent different isomers outside laboratory conditions, outside cryogenic temperatures, and he starts selling it.
Sure.
And he's making a killing out of his Winnebago. Is that covered by the New York statute? Is that criminal?
We don't believe that It would be, given that you were looking at the statute at the time that is enacted and what exists at that time.
So you're thinking, even though they said all isomers and he's selling an isomer, you're saying you would want us to say he found a brilliant loophole and he's not going to be prosecuted under New York law.
I don't think you would under that in that scenario unless New York amended its statute. Okay. But I think for our purposes under the categorical approach, what you would be looking at is what we know now. And that's really...
So let me back up. Assume for the sake of argument, we rejected that proposition, mm-hmm. just to move on to another
sure.
form of the argument. And let's assume that we thought that New York's definition would be elastic enough to cover further developments in science.
Sure.
So that as more isomers of methamphetamine are discovered, New York prosecutors could still prosecute them. I understand the realistic probability test or your argument on the realistic probability test to be a different one. Not that New York law in the future wouldn't cover them if they existed, but the realistic probability test in your view would say, but they don't exist now.
Correct.
And therefore there is no realistic probability that there's a pool of conduct that could be prosecuted under one statute that couldn't be prosecuted under the other statute. And I think that's analytically different from the what does New York law, what could it cover in the future? Or am I wrong?
No,
you think they are the same?
No, Judge Nardini, I think you're right. And so I don't think the answer to your first hypothetical actually answers what is at issue here because of that distinction. And that's because of what Draghi you were getting to before, which is what is the purpose of the categorical approach? It is a backward-looking inquiry into what we must establish necessarily an individual is convicted of. And so at the time of conviction, or now, because in both of those scenarios, petitioner concedes that non-optical isomers of methamphetamine do not exist in their current state. And all we're doing with the categorical approach, which to be sure, and as I'm sure this panel knows, presents plenty of constraints, but it's not a game of gotcha where you just refer to a term in a statute and all of a sudden that makes something overbroad, regardless of whether it exists or not. The point of the categorical approach is to establish what an individual was necessarily convicted of. So you look at the statute's terms and you look at what they mean at the time of the conviction.
Well, help me out with how we as a court would approach this. We're looking at one statute that says isomers, and we're looking at another statute that says optical isomers. So one might think, well, one has a qualifier on it and the other doesn't. And I gather at step two, you would say, but the only thing that exists are optical isomers, so they have to have equivalent meaning. The next step, a defendant might say, but there is a possibility of non-optical isomers. Do we then say, well, how soon? You know, like scientists are working for it. We don't know when they'll get a breakthrough. Scientists aren't working on it. How do we decide whether or not there are likely to be non-optical isomers?
Right, Your Honor.
Do we not care about that?
I don't want to duck the difficult question because it is a little difficult. I don't think it needs to be answered here because of what I just said about the categorical approach looking backwards. So
for instance, if we take this case under advisement and 2 weeks from now read in the Times that they've now managed to make non-optical isomers pretty easily, our decision stays the same because we're only looking backward?
Well, so yes, imagine a future immigration case. So let's keep in the categorical approach world. I guess it could come up also in the criminal sentencing context. But in the categorical approach world, say something like that does happen in 2 weeks. This court now, say today, issues a published decision saying this is a match based on the factual record here. We don't have any reason to believe there's any non-optical isomers in that. And then 2 weeks down the road, you have this scientific breakthrough of some sort. The question would still be, looking back to whenever somebody was convicted, can we be assured that that person was not convicted of non-optical isomers of meth? Can we be assured that at that time, they necessarily were convicted only of optical isomers of meth?
So again, I know exactly what you're asking us. And if a month or so after the breakthrough, someone sells it and New York brings a prosecution, That, too, you would take the view is irrelevant because there was no possibility for a non-optical isomer at the time the defendant was convicted or the petitioner was convicted. Is that what you're going to urge us to say?
I think that's right, Your Honor. And I'd say a couple important qualifications there is the timing would be important for sure. The timing would be important for sure. Because, again, and this is why we focus so much on the categorical approach, the sort of drug schedules at the time, both on the federal and the state side, and the meaning of the terms at the time, so that if there's an amendment since the time of conviction, that doesn't come into play. The timing matters a lot. So in your example, if there had been a prosecution for something because that non-optical isomer all of a sudden was created in a lab somewhere, and that prosecution or some other evidence that New York was covering that happened before the time of conviction, then that would be a change. And we submit that even if there were a published decision today saying this is a match, then in the future, you would have that as establishing a realistic probability or at a minimum presenting a categorical approach problem that this court would need to revisit. But again, the inquiry is backward looking. And as of now, you look at petitioner's 2016 offense and what we know could have been part of that. And as petitioner himself concedes, now the same exact thing, which is that non-optical isomers of meth do not presently exist.
So in Minter, we said that if a state law is facially overbroad, we look no further. What do we do with that language here? Do we just ignore it?
I don't think you're ignoring it at all, Your Honor. I think facial overbreadth is a bit of a misnomer, and I don't want it to get too caught up into. We recognize that a statute is plain on its terms, then there's no reason to resort to the realistic probability test. That is meant to be only a backstop when a statute has indeterminate reach. But facial overbreadth isn't, as I think petitioner just suggested, just looking at the terms of the statute. It's a question of statutory interpretation. You always have to give meaning to the terms in a statute. So just as you would look at cross definitions in a New York statute or some other state, depending on what's at issue before the court, here you have to give factual and scientific understanding to what those terms mean. So Minter said that the statute included all isomers of cocaine, and that mattered there because cocaine had isomers beyond the optical and geometric isomers that were part of the federal definition. So I don't think this really presents a facial overbreath problem. We recognize that the doctrine exists. We recognize that this court has recognized it. I don't think you have a problem there. You still have to give meaning to statutory terms. And if a statute covers dragons, and dragons don't exist, then you don't have a categorical match, at least without showing the realistic probability test.
Could you just help me out? Because I'm still not sure that this is, whether you're mixing and matching or combining the question of statutory interpretation and the realistic probability test, because you say it's a question of giving meaning to statutory terms. What is the meaning you would ascribe to the definition of meth under state law and the meaning of meth under federal law? What is the meaning you're saying? Because there's a difference between saying this is what this definition means, this is what that definition means, and saying they're the same. The realistic probability test strikes me as a slightly different inquiry.
Without question, Your Honor, let me clarify. The realistic probability test only comes in later on. So looking only at the categorical approach as the comparison of the two definitions,
Yeah. You
have New York saying meth and isomers, which right. After Minter, we're saying all isomers. But you then construe that to mean what isomers of meth actually exist. So you are just understanding the statutory term meth, all isomers. Well, it says isomers, right? We're construing that as all isomers after Minter. And you still, though, need to interpret what isomers of meth actually exist, which is why we did the
factor. For the realistic probability.
No. Realistic probability test only comes into play. And
so you're saying we don't apply the realistic probability test?
We're saying that petitioner's only way of establishing this would be a realistic probability because the statutory terms match. And the statutory terms match.
But again, that's sort of going back to our original discussion of you're asking us to say New York law means this. It does not mean these other isomers. And again, if we have the scientific breakthrough in 5 years,
sure,
and the streets are flooded with the new isomers of meth, you're telling us that New York could not prosecute any of those people under the statute.
Well, this is where the distinction in your first questions mattered. What I'm saying is New York law at the time of its conviction necessarily meant only optical isomers of methamphetamine. That's the question for this court is in 2016, and again, even presently, does New York's definition of meth match the federal definition of meth? And it does because non-optical isomers do not exist.
It seems to me you've got temporal limits on your definition. Did it mean that? Then there's, does it mean that today? And then there's, will it mean that in the future? And if I've understood what you've just said correctly, there could be three different answers to that. And if that's your position, what authority supports construing statutes that way in terms of past, present, and future?
Well, Your Honor, every authority where this court has done categorical approach has looked at the definition of the statute at the time of conviction, and both on the federal side and the state side. So any categorical, I think Doe versus Sessions is a case where they specifically answer the question of whether it's.
Have any of them distinguished what we're interpreting, what it meant then, and acknowledging that there could be a different meaning, either at present or in the future?
I don't know of a decision where the court has gotten at into that level of granularity. And again, I think for present purposes, and this is where, of course, there's an overlap in what we do in the categorical approach and what the meaning of that criminal conviction or criminal offense means for New York State purposes, a lot of overlap there. But for present purposes, you don't need to determine the full scope of the New York statute in the future based on a possible scientific breakthrough moving forward. The question for present purposes under the categorical approach is what do we know that petitioner was necessarily convicted of?
And that seems like a different question that can be somewhat dependent on reality and facts.
Yes.
A different question from, in the abstract, what is the proper interpretation of New York law?
Well, it is the proper.
Those are identical, or necessarily intertwined.
Necessarily intertwined at the time of the offense. So what does New York law necessarily, what did petitioner's offense under New York law necessarily entail at the time that it was, at the time of the conviction?
The problem with that approach is that we have many cases that say we don't care what the defendant's actual conduct was. I mean, if that were the test, we know that the methamphetamine he got convicted of would match the optical isomer that the federal statute has. But we don't care about that. We care about what's the least necessary to secure a conviction under that statute. Now, if I've understood your argument, it's ask that question, what's the least necessary at the time of his conviction? Is that right? That's what you're saying?
That's right. Okay. But to be clear, we're not talking about the facts. You're right. Of course, the categorical approach doesn't look at the facts.
What would be the least necessary to secure a conviction of anyone at that time?
Exactly. And all I'm saying is you focus on the elements. So again, not the facts, but the elements at the time of conviction. And that's the distinction
I'm making. You're saying not what's the least necessary, what's the least possible to secure a conviction.
Right. We use the word necessary because to include everything that's possibly involved in the statute. I mean, if I could just very briefly say, I don't think this court needs to do anything different really from what Minter said. You look at the statutes, you look at their meaning, and if there's something that does exist and it's in the statute, it's overbroad on its face, no reason to resort to the realistic probability test. But if it doesn't exist, and that's Rodriguez-Gamboa, which is this exact same question, there's no reason to rely on anything other than you have a categorical match, and anything beyond that would just be a hypothetical assertion, and that requires a satisfaction of the realistic probability test.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Why don't we hear from Mr. Azen? You reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if there's anything you'd like to add.
Your Honors, the statute, methamphetamine is defined in the New York statute. Specifically, it says methamphetamine, it's salts, isomers, or salts of isomers, and said preparations, compounds, mixtures, and substances. That's the definition.
Well, why isn't it, though, the way we would look at it, what I just suggested to your adversary, which is, What's the least possible to secure a conviction at the time of your client's, at the time of petitioner's conviction? What's the least possible that would have secured a conviction?
Your Honor, this court has wisely said that you look at the plain language of the statute, what it actually says. The problem with the government's argument, Your Honor.
At the time of the conviction of 2016, could anyone have been convicted for non-optical meth?
No, Your Honor, but at the time of conviction, the definition of methamphetamine still included all isomers.
Is another way of understanding your answer to say, legally, yes, they could have been convicted of it, but as a factual matter, no, there's no scenario where they could have been convicted of it.
Yes, Your Honor. This is purely a legal question.
And you say that's a legal question. We don't get into facts, period.
Correct.
That the gist of your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a purely legal question. Again, the test that this court has articulated is that you look at the plain language of the statute and whether it is facially overbroad compared with its federal equivalent. And in this particular case, and it is. In fact, the government concedes that. In the first board decision, they said this language is facially overbroad. And so at that point, this court has said, we look no further.
But we didn't have a scenario in Minter where we were dealing with dragons, right? These exotic, non-existent isomers of methamphetamine. So does Minter really answer our question here when we have a completely different scenario that was not presented in Minter?
It does, Your Honor, because it gives this court a plain test that not only puts everybody on notice as to what is legal and what is illegal in the state of New York when it comes to this particular drug, but it also allows, I admit, it could lead to some crazy result. I acknowledge that. But as a legal proposition, this court looks at the facial language. And in this case, the facial language of methamphetamine includes all isomers. The federal definition only includes optical isomers.
But we do sometimes have to look at facts to interpret language. I mean, we've had cases in which the question was whether a conviction for murder or a conviction for manslaughter was a categorically violent crime. And we've gotten into all kinds of scenarios about, well, if you poison the person, are you engaging in violence? If you commit the crime through a failure to act, are you engaging in violence? So we get into the facts all the time. And that's where I wonder why we wouldn't get into, well, is that factual scenario even possible?
Your Honor, may I respond? I see I'm all right. So, Your Honor, the realistic probability test can come in where the statute is indeterminate. It's not only when there's a categorical match. Most of the time, though, it's when there's a categorical match. But this court has said that it applies when it's indeterminate. We're trying to figure. But in this case, Your Honor, the facial language of the statute is plain. It's clear. There's no limitations on the term isomers. So as a matter of law, this statute is facially overbroad. And again, the government conceded that point. In fact, the board said it was sending it down for a realistic probability test. And this court has, again, I won't list all the cases again, but this court has said that when the statute is facially overbroad, the realistic probability test does not apply. And the government's argument that we start looking at what it was at the time and like that, Your Honor, I would submit that that's just another iteration of the realistic probability test. Because if you say it's facially overbroad, we look no further than anything beyond that is the realistic probability test or some iteration of that, which this court has said does not apply.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Can I just ask
yes.
A softball? What is the...
I appreciate it.
The Erie County Volunteer Lawyers Project. I was just curious to see that you're doing this case. What is the project?
We offer We offer legal services to those who cannot afford it. My particular unit represents individuals pro bono who are detained at the Buffalo Federal Detention Facility. We represent them in federal court and in immigration court.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you very much for your pro bono service. We appreciate arguments both counsel well argued in a very complicated case. So we thank you both. We will take the case under advisement.